Have you ever heard that saying, silence is golden? Well, in the world of partnerships, saying nothing can actually really land you in some hot water. Today, we're taking a deep dive into a Florida case, R&R Investments Limited Partnership versus People's First Community Bank, that really illustrates this idea perfectly. It's kind of a cautionary tale for, I think, anybody who's involved in partnerships, whether you're a general partner or a limited partner, or even somebody doing business with one.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This case is a great example of how, you know, business deals that seem pretty straightforward on the surface can turn into these legal nightmares if this idea of partnership authority isn't really clearly understood.
Okay, so let's set the stage here for our listeners. Yeah. We've got R&R Investments, which is a limited partnership, and they're aiming to build and sell a really nice house, a luxury home in Destin, Florida. I mean, this sounds like a pretty typical real estate venture, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, for sure, at least initially. But things kind of went south when the partnership, they ended up defaulting on a pretty big construction loan. And this led to this whole legal battle over, like, who even had the authority to sign on the dotted line when they got that loan.
So it sounds like the partnership agreement itself had some pretty specific restrictions on what Bernard Roger, who was the general partner, could and couldn't do. And this was especially true when it came to the budget, right?
Exactly. So Roger, he was allowed to exceed the budget, but only by 5%, like overall, or he could go over by 10%, but that was only on a per line item basis. But the really important detail here is that any borrowing or spending beyond those limits, they needed written consent. It had to come from the limited partners. And that little detail, I think, is really crucial to understanding why this case ended up going to court.
So what happened? Did Roger just like forget to get that okay from the limited partners before he went out and got this loan?
Well, what happened was Roger went ahead and got this construction loan. It was for $990,000 and he got it from People's First Community Bank. But the limited partners, they were claiming that they had only agreed to a maximum loan amount of like $650,000. And so they argued that they never actually gave consent to a loan this big, especially since it was so far over those limits that they had all agreed on.
Ah, okay. So that's where the conflict comes in.
Yeah.
R&R, they default on the loan and then the bank goes and forecloses and everybody starts pointing fingers.
Yeah.
So what was R&R's like legal argument in all of this?
So R&R's argument was essentially that the bank was negligent. They were saying that the bank should have known about the restrictions that were in the partnership agreement, and because of that, they shouldn't have given Roger that loan without verifying that he actually had the authority to do it.
It's interesting. So did the court agree with R&R? Did they buy that argument?
They didn't. The trial court ended up siding with the bank, and they actually granted the bank what's called summary judgment. What that basically means is that the court said, you know, based on the law, like the actual rules and the facts that nobody was disputing, there really wasn't any need for a full-blown trial. And then this decision actually ended up getting upheld on appeal. And that's important, you know, because it sets this precedent for all these future partnership cases in Florida.
Okay, so I'm starting to see where this idea that silence isn't golden comes in. So R&R, they had all these internal restrictions, but did they actually tell the bank about them? Like, did they communicate those restrictions?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. That's really what this whole case is all about. It all boils down to this legal idea called apparent authority, which is outlined in Florida Statute 620.8301. Basically, what this statute says is that a partner's actions, even if they go beyond like their internal limits, can actually still bind the whole partnership. But that's only if that third party, which in our case here is the bank, had no idea that those restrictions even existed.
Okay. So even if Roger was like going rogue and exceeding what he was actually allowed to do, the whole partnership could still be held responsible because to the bank, it looked like he had the power to get that loan.
Yeah, exactly. And the burden of proof, it's actually on the partnership. They're the ones that have to prove that the bank actually knew or should have known about those limitations.
So it's not the bank's job to like dig through partnership agreements and find out all those little details about their internal rules.
No, not at all. It really comes down to clear communication. The court, they made it super clear that just filing the partnership agreement like somewhere official, that wasn't enough to put the bank on notice. R&R, they needed to tell the bank directly about those restrictions on Roger's authority to borrow money.
Okay, so that raises a question for me. I know the court used this two-step test to analyze this case, right?
Right, yeah.
So like, what exactly was that test?
Well, first they looked at whether Roger, as the general partner, was acting within what's called the ordinary course of the partnership's business when he went and got the loan.
Well, I mean, getting financing for like a construction project. That seems like pretty standard practice for a business like this, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Getting financing is like a typical part of these types of projects. So that first part of the test, it was satisfied. Then the court, they went on to the second step. And they looked at whether the bank actually knew or had some kind of notice about the restrictions that were in the partnership agreement.
And from what we've talked about, it sounds like R&R didn't really give the court any evidence to show that the bank knew about those internal limits on Roger.
Exactly. And, you know, this is where things start to get pretty interesting from, like, a legal strategy perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Simply filing a statement of partnership authority, which is something you can do under Florida Statute 620.83003, or even just directly telling the bank, those things could have potentially protected those limited partners.
So even though they had all those restrictions spelled out in the partnership agreement, it was basically all meaningless to the bank because R&R didn't do a good job of communicating them. This case really shows just how important it is to make sure that anything that's written down internally, that it's made super clear to the outside world too, especially when it has to do with limits on a partner's authority.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And you know what makes this case even more interesting is that two of the judges, Judge Minor and Judge Wolf, they actually offered what are called concurring opinions that added some really fascinating nuances to the discussion.
Ooh, concurring opinions. That's where things can get really juicy. Let's dive into those and see what other insights we can extract for our listeners.
Yeah, definitely. Let's start with Judge Minor. What really stood out to me from their opinion was Judge Miners was really emphasizing how important it is for partnerships to be super upfront about things. Like, they should just directly notify anybody, any third party, about any restrictions that are on a partner's authority. And the reason for that, you know, is to prevent any kind of ambiguity or potential disputes later on down the road.
Yeah, that seems like it makes a lot of sense, right? Like, clear communication can help prevent so many headaches in the future. Okay, so what about Judge Wolf's concurring opinion? What were some of the main points they made?
Well, Judge Wolf, they had a bit of a different perspective. They were kind of suggesting that, okay, lenders, they're not required to become like legal detectives, but they should still do a reasonable amount of due diligence, you know, like their homework. And while they acknowledged that the bank, in this particular case, they did act properly, Judge Wolf seemed to be advocating for maybe like a slightly higher standard of scrutiny when lenders are dealing with partnerships.
So even though Judge Wolf agreed with the overall outcome of the case, they were basically saying that lenders could maybe try to avoid these kinds of situations altogether by being a little more thorough in how they look at the partnership's internal structure.
Yeah, exactly. It's not about placing this huge burden on lenders, but more about encouraging them to take some extra steps that could really help prevent these big, expensive legal battles down the line.
I think that's a really valuable takeaway for our listeners, especially those who are involved in lending practices, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if the law doesn't specifically say you have to do it, a little bit of extra due diligence can really go a long way in protecting everybody who's involved. Now, you know, we've really examined this R&R Investments case in detail, but this case has some broader implications that kind of go beyond just real estate ventures, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, the big lesson here, this idea that internal agreements, they don't really mean anything to people outside the partnership unless you actually communicate them properly. That applies to pretty much any business situation. It doesn't really matter if you're a small business owner who's just starting a partnership or you're like an investor backing a new venture. The principle is still the same.
So it's not enough to just have a well-written partnership agreement that outlines everybody's roles and responsibilities and any kind of limitations. You've actually got to go a step further and make sure that all those details are communicated clearly to anybody who might end up doing business with the partnership.
Exactly. Let's just say, for example, you're a partner in this tech startup and your partnership agreement says that any expenses that go over, like $10,000, they need unanimous consent. All the partners have to agree to it. But then, what if one of the partners just decides to go rogue and they sign a contract with a vendor that's way more than that limit without even talking to the other partners?
Oh, wow. That sounds like it could really get messy, especially if that vendor didn't know anything about that internal limit on spending. So in that situation, could the whole partnership actually be held to that contract, even if it violates their internal agreement?
Yeah, that's definitely a real possibility. If the vendor had no idea about that spending restriction, the partnership could be bound by that contract. And that would leave those other partners potentially on the hook for this deal that they never agreed to in the first place.
So even if a partner does something that they weren't really authorized to do, their actions can still be binding on the entire partnership if that third party, that vendor in our example, reasonably believed that the partner had the authority to make that deal.
That's exactly the danger of apparent authority. To someone looking in from the outside, that partner, it looked like they had the power to enter into that contract. And if the vendor didn't have any reason to think otherwise, then yeah, the partnership's kind of stuck with the consequences.
Wow, this is all starting to feel like one of those legal thriller movies. Okay, so what are some steps that partnerships can take to protect themselves from these types of situations? Are there any, like, legal safeguards in place?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Fortunately, there are. We've already talked about that option of filing a statement of partnership authority under Florida law that basically creates this public record of any limits that are placed on a partner's authority. But there are also some other, like, practical things that partnerships can do even beyond that formal step.
So what are some actionable tips that our listeners could actually implement in their own businesses?
Well, I'd say first and foremost, direct and really clear communication is absolutely essential. Anytime you're entering into any kind of agreement with a third party, you got to make sure you spell out those limits on your partner's authority. Don't just assume they already know. Think of it as like you're proactively setting expectations and avoiding any misunderstandings.
So like using our tech startup example, you would want to be really upfront with that vendor and say something like, hey, just so you know, any contracts that are over $10,000, they need to be approved by all of the partners.
Yeah, exactly. Be super transparent about those limitations. You could even put a clause in your contracts that specifically states that no single partner can bind the partnership beyond certain limits. It's kind of like you're adding another layer of protection.
That's a really smart idea. It's like you're building this legal safety net right into your agreements. Okay, so are there any other steps that partnerships can take to protect themselves?
Yeah, definitely. Another best practice is to put some internal controls and procedures in place that require, you know, multiple levels of approval before any major decisions or transactions can happen. It's all about checks and balances.
So instead of just relying on the good faith of your partners, you're creating this system that makes sure everyone is accountable and that minimizes the risk of one partner just doing whatever they want and exceeding their authority.
Exactly. So, for instance, you might require that any contract over a certain amount needs to be reviewed and signed off on by at least two partners. Or you could set up a system where all the contracts that are going out, they have to be looked over by a lawyer before they're finalized. It's just about building those safeguards into the process.
I really like these practical tips. It's all about being proactive and creating that system of checks and balances within the partnership itself. But, you know, I imagine that partnership law can be pretty complex and daunting, right?
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give to our listeners who might be feeling a little overwhelmed by all of this information?
Honestly, I cannot overemphasize how important it is to get some legal advice when you're drafting your partnership agreement and setting up your business practices. An attorney who specializes in partnership law, they can guide you through all the little nuances of these concepts and make sure that you're really protected.
I think that's great advice for anyone who's dealing with the complexities of partnership law. It's about seeking out that expert guidance so you can make informed decisions and protect your interests.
Speaking of protecting interests, I'm curious about the other side of the coin here. What about the role of due diligence when it comes to third parties who are doing business with partnerships?
No, that's a great point. So while the R&R investments case, it really focuses on the responsibilities of partnerships, it also brings up some important questions for third parties like banks. It highlights how important it is for them to really do their homework before they enter into agreements with partnerships.
So even though the law might not specifically require it, there's a strong argument to be made that those third parties, they have a real interest in understanding how the partnership operates internally and what the limits are on a partner's authority. Absolutely. And this is where Judge Wolf's concurring opinion becomes particularly relevant. Remember, they were suggesting that lenders, even though they're not legally obligated, they could potentially avoid these types of situations by being a little bit more diligent.
It sounds like it's not just about legal protection, but also about smart business practices.
Yeah.
Taking those extra steps to make sure, you know, the partner has the authority they claim to have, that could save everyone involved a lot of headaches and maybe even some financial losses in the long run.
Exactly. It's like that saying, trust but verify. Don't just take somebody's word for it that they have the authority to bind the partnership. Ask for documentation. If you can, look over the partnership agreement and just make sure that you're comfortable with the level of authority that that partner really has.
You know, knowledge really is power, especially when it comes to the world of partnerships. The more you know about the inner workings of a partnership and the limits on a partner's authority, the better equipped you are to protect yourself. So, as we continue this deep dive into this case, I want to shift gears a little bit and focus on something that often goes hand in hand with all these legal considerations, and that's ethics. What are some of the ethical considerations that we should be thinking about in a case like this?
That's a really interesting question. While we've spent most of our time talking about the legal side of things, there are definitely some ethical considerations woven into this whole situation.
Yeah, and we've talked about how clear communication is so important for partnerships, you know, to avoid any legal issues. But isn't there also, like, an ethical responsibility to be transparent, both within the partnership itself and in how they deal with third parties?
Oh, absolutely. Ethical behavior in these kinds of situations, it's not just about following the letter of the law, you know, it's about creating trust, being transparent, and making sure everyone is treated fairly in all your business interactions.
So if we look back at the R&R Investments case, it seems like there wasn't a whole lot of transparency going on. Not really within the partnership and not between the partnership and the bank either.
Right, yeah. The limited partners, they were saying that they weren't really in the loop about the loan that Roger went and got. And while the court didn't say that the bank was liable, you could definitely argue that they could have been a little more, let's say, proactive in making sure that they understood the partnership's internal agreement and the limits on Roger's authority. Yeah. It all kind of circles back to that idea of ethical due diligence that we were talking about earlier.
It sounds like ethical behavior in business, and especially when you're talking about partnerships, it's not just about staying out of legal trouble, right? Mm-hmm. It's also about building and keeping that trust between all the parties that are involved.
Yeah, exactly. It's about acting with integrity, you know, making sure that your actions are in line with your values and really trying to foster that kind of culture of openness and honesty in all your business dealings.
So as we kind of wrap up this deep dive into this case, what are some of the key takeaways that our listeners should really remember when it comes to, like, navigating this ethical side of partnership law?
I think the big theme here is open communication. Being honest and transparent in how you communicate, that's really the foundation for building strong ethical business practices. And that applies both within the partnership itself and when you're dealing with people outside the partnership.
It sounds like that's a pretty solid ethical compass to guide our listeners as they go out into this complex world of partnerships and business dealings. Do you have any final words of wisdom for our legal eagles out there before we sign off on this deep dive?
Yeah, always remember, if you're ever in doubt, just go talk to a lawyer. A good attorney who specializes in partnership law, they can help you sort through all the legal and ethical ins and outs, and they can make sure that you're making decisions that are not only legally sound, but ethically responsible too. It's all about protecting yourself and building that strong foundation for success.
Those are some wise words. Well, that brings us to the end of our exploration of the R&R Investments case and this really fascinating world of partnership law. We hope you found this deep dive informative and maybe even a little bit insightful.
And as always, we encourage you to keep digging into these topics. Partnership law is always changing, so staying informed is so important for protecting your interests and making smart business decisions.
Thanks for joining us on the deep dive. We'll see you next time. Until then, keep learning, keep asking questions, and keep striving for that ethical excellence in everything you do in the legal world.